Chase, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by the law offices of Amanda J. Gentry. Outkick 360's Jonathan Hutton joins the show now. Hut, Ryan Tannehill leaves the Chargers game with an ankle injury, comes back, gets banged up, out of practice on Tuesday. In your opinion, how should the Tennessee Titans move forward at the quarterback position on Saturday against the Texans?
Well, if he's able to go, they should move forward with Ryan Tannehill first and foremost. I don't think that's going to be the case based on all the indications and based on the fact they signed Josh Dobbs today. So, yeah, I think it's Malik Willis. I think they're comfortable with a certain game plan, including Malik in that. But it's not like Malik Willis is going to win you games. The way they win on Saturday is with Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry, the last four games against the Texans, has rushed for 200+. So he's got to be that guy. But quite frankly, even when he's rushed for 100+ recently, they've lost their last three games. So this is more than just the quarterback dilemma, the quarterback injury. There are a lot of problems right now with this team.
And you mentioned Derrick Henry, and I think that's obvious, right? I mean, Malik Willis is in. You just give the ball to Derrick Henry. Run it with Derrick Henry. That seems obvious to me. But yep. I fear that Todd Downing has made a lot of decisions that aren't the obvious thing to do. Third and two, Derrick Henry's on the sidelines. There's so many just moves that I feel like are obvious that Todd Downing doesn't defer to Derrick Henry.
And I don't understand how he's not more of a focal point, given the fact of what they have to work with, period, across the board. Time of possession is crucial. That is their identity. I think that's also telling you they don't have any faith in this offensive line to get much push. I mean, they are light in the saddle, so to speak, D-Mace, when mm-hmm. it comes to the middle of that line, especially when Ben Jones is banged up. So I think that plays a factor. But look, the Titans have lost the last three when he's gone from 100+. They were 26-3 prior to these last three games. And he has 1,300 yards rushing this season. He's the second leading rusher in the NFL. He has a career high in receiving yards right now on the season. And this team is 7-7. So it's got to be more about Henry, yes, but it's so much more as a group for what they're not doing. And here's the other factor. The 10-yard penalties, this team is not capable of picking up a first down if they get a 10-yard penalty to start things off. And that's just – they are inadequate down the field. So that takes the run game out of it completely on third and long. And they had third and 7+, third and 9+, quite a few times last week, the majority of the time, quite frankly. And look, the last 2 weeks, Caroline, Derrick Henry has 38 carries total for 225 yards. They got to give him the football more.
Criminal.
Yeah, and after he fumbled for the second game in a row, Vrabel was asked, I believe Kaharski asked him about, is this now a trend? And Vrabel's just quick response, which, I mean, he's been giving recently, was, we look forward to giving him the ball as much as possible next week. Where's that? I mean, that needs to be Saturday. They need to play more of a style that they did down in Houston. It wasn't pretty, but it was during a stretch where they were 7-3. They need to win a game more than they need to beat the Houston Texans.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying, Jonathan. You know, listening to Kevin Byard and hearing his frustrations, because everybody understands. Listen, he's the leader, I believe, of that team, but he always managed to be a glass half full guy, and yeah. He's always come out yep. positive. But this time, you saw and you heard the frustrations, and he was right. Listen, it's not about the AFC South right now. It's about winning a ball game. I said last week was a huge game for the Titans, not because it put them closer to winning a division, but for the morale of the team. It doesn't bolster the team when you're on a four-game losing streak.
No, and the free fall that they're on, where you know the defense is doing some nice things. I mean, they're holding opponents points-wise to where you should be in the league and where you should be winning, getting out of your rut. And instead, it's been the opposite. You know, The Titans offense really struggling on third down. Meanwhile, the defense is doing some good things and getting off the field. Justin Herbert, he had the final drive, but the Titans defense last week had a great plan. And, you know, Byard is, well, they're not pointing fingers, but he's also just straight up saying, like, the group we have in front of us right now, not just speaking on offense, but everything, it's not a playoff caliber team. They may get to the postseason, but I think every guy in that locker room knows that Jacksonville right now is the better team currently. A game out, I'm reading reports where it seemed like the players were surprised to learn that the Jags were a game behind them after that loss in L.A. It's a tired locker room. It is a banged up, bruised, battered locker room. And it's a group that I feel like they're seeing what's coming. And what's coming is a surge from Jacksonville playing much better football. And, you know, the scenarios are out there that the Titans can need to win. But, I mean, if Jacksonville wins this week and somehow the Houston Texans, based on the way they're playing, they can beat the Titans. Somehow the Texans beat the Titans. The Jags have the same record, but they'll hold the head tiebreaker. They'll be number one in the AFC South. And that'll be the storyline. It'll be the free fall for the Titans. And it'll set up a Week 18 in 2 weeks where the Jags win and they're in. And it could be all settled before that, quite frankly, if the Titans continue to lose.
Yeah, you're right about that. Now, another question I want to ask you in regards to the offensive line. Listen, we've talked about them, and we've exhausted everything with them. And we know who they are, what they have been, and what they're going to be moving forward. But Vrabel has taken on this approach of this, you know, we're going to give you, you know, the first quarter, you the second quarter, and then sort of let it work itself out. To me, that's college. You do that in college or in high school. Yep. You can't afford to do that in the NFL. To me, either you go with one guy and you stick with them, whether it be, you know, daily or ratings, or, I mean, you can't keep on going back and forth, because that tells the team, one, you're not going to have any cohesiveness on that offensive line if you keep on pulling one guy in and another guy in and then another guy out just because he may be playing well that particular moment. If you're going to go with Daly, go with Daly. If you're going to go with ratings, go with ratings and stick with them. The in and out thing, I don't think you can do that with an offensive lineman.
I agree, and here's the bad thing. I mean, they're doing the in-and-out thing. That was an improvement on what they were doing going into that week, where they were just playing Dennis Daly. And I talked about it last week with you guys. I said, like, I was expecting the week prior against Jacksonville for them to pull the Raiden's card that they did against San Francisco, where they told him around 24 to 12 hours prior to the game, hey, you're starting. They didn't tell him on the short week early. They didn't want him thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And they started him. He wasn't great, but he wasn't Dennis Daly bad. The problem now is, Mace, it's Dennis Daly because Raiden's an on injured reserve. They made that official today. So he's not playing. He's done for the year. And they only have one recall back, and that'll be David Long Jr. So, yeah, I mean, it's not good. It's going to be Dennis Daly and more of the same. Good news is you've got Malik Willis, who's much more mobile than Tannehill right now, even if Tannehill can play. Or was playing with the ankle injury he was playing through anyway. But it's not ideal. And Dennis Daly, I'll say this again. I'm not crushing. He's a pro player. Mm-hmm. He's the worst player on the 53-man roster currently. And they continue to roll him out there at left tackle for whatever reason.
Coming up next, what should the Titans prioritize this weekend? Jonathan Hunt will stick around with us. Coming up next, Chase Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Jonathan Hutton joins us now, Outkick 360. Jonathan Hutton, sponsored by Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars. Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars is the go-to spot in Nashville for the best old-fashioned, a nice relaxing cigar, and lots of high-end spirits and wine. Jonathan Hutton is brought to you by Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars. Visit Blend Bar in the heart of downtown Nashville today. Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars, luxury redefined. Now, Hutton, what do you think is more important for the Titans right now? One, get healthy, or two, beat the Texans, both for the division and also just to help the morale in this locker room that seems to be at an all-time low?
They're not going to be able to get healthy that fast with just 1 week. So it's more about beating the Texans and trying to just keep pace with Jacksonville right now, getting to week 18. I would have argued this earlier if they beat Jacksonville, if they wrap up the division sooner rather than later. They've had a couple of weeks where they could have done this, and it wasn't against the Chargers. It was too late. The idea, I think, could be, hey, make sure you're good to go. It's kind of like last year. Make sure you're good to go going into the postseason, except it's reverse. It's more about Jeffrey Simmons and Autry and that group and the secondary and at linebacker than it was last year with Henry and, you know, an offensive lineman or two and an entire wide receiving core that was trying to get back and playing together. So that's what I think would have been ideal. Now it's just about trying to make the playoffs. And to do that, they've got to play the guys who are banged up and the guys who are hurt. They have to hope that they can come back. But, I mean, right now with injured reserve, the guys that are on there, the really only guy I think is capable of being recalled is Long. And that's because they have one recall left. So the guys on the roster, the guys on the roster. So I would vote for the win more than I would health concerns right now.
And I think, too, I mean, I listened to some of the comments made from Kevin Byard, for example, in the locker room after the loss to the Chargers. He sounds so defeated, talking about why would we even make the playoffs if we don't think that we can win a game. Derrick Henry, so audibly displeased and just honestly pissed off. I worry about the morale in this locker room, and I think that getting a win, even if it is the crummy, crappy Houston Texans, a win's a win, and it starts to turn morale around.
Well, so pulling some notes on the losing streak itself and what they're – I mean, the players know this without having to mention this. Vrabel doesn't have to point this out. But in the losing streak, the Titans have scored 15 points in the second half total over these four games. They've been outscored by 29 points in the second half. So the defense is doing its job. The offense just doesn't do anything after the first half, and it's very little in the first half as it is. The Titans are the only team currently in the playoffs without a win since week 12, which, again, four games. And then if you start looking deeper, 15.5 points per game in the second half, that's NFL worst, or in a game period, all four quarters, excuse me. Only 300 yards per game offensively on average. 76% of their drives end in a punt, and or not even a punt, they end with no points, so it could be a missed field goal. And they allow 328 passing yards per game during this stretch, but they've been very good against the run. So they have been able to pinpoint and shut down one element of the opposing offense. They're only allowing 77 yards per game rushing during the four games we're specifically zeroing in on, but that's not good enough. And it's frustrating because it's an offense that can't score 20 points. And in looking at some notes this morning on a flight back to Nashville, NFL teams have scored 30 or more points 87 times this season. And, of course, the Titans have none of those 87 instances of 30-plus points. NFL teams have scored 20 or less 207 times, and the Titans have 9 games this season where they've scored 20 or less. So it doesn't really matter what, you know, if Byard and the defense is playing like a playoff team or not. This isn't a playoff team because they can't get to the end zone or, in some cases, make a field goal.
And this has been their problem for the last two seasons, the inconsistencies of the offense and their ability not to be able to score points at a clip that maybe other teams are scoring, the top half of the NFL at least. And you wouldn't expect that from a team that does have, you know, players, especially last season, and they just couldn't. They were not able to do it, Hutton. But if this team doesn't say if they, you know, they squander this whole thing, they get to Jacksonville and it's a win and you in, lose you go home, and they end up losing that game. What would it say about the Tennessee Titans? What do you think the national consensus would be? Local, but national. What do you think it would be said about the organization, the owner, the head coach, and the players?
I mean, nationally, I think it would validate everything the national pundits were saying preseason, which was this isn't a very good team in regards to upper shelf of the league, right? I think they would put them, if they did a power ranking or whatever, I think they would have them like top 15, maybe, like right at the middle of the NFL. But, I mean, that's kind of where they had them preseason, and that's where they are based on their record. So, yeah, I don't know if it would be a lot of ridicule as much as it is, you know, back to insignificance in terms of talking points from the talking heads nationally. And locally, you know, and I was one of those guys, you know, I will be proven wrong based on your scenario if they don't make the playoffs and they have the free fall on the way out. Because, and I mentioned this, that I felt like when Robinson was fired, when he was fired, it set up to me a stretch where it was going to be the toughest stretch of Vrabel's coaching career so far here in Nashville. And that would certainly be the case because we're going into an offseason where they're going to pair him with the general manager. Vrabel's going to have a lot more say, that's for sure. And they've got an overhaul or a retool, but even if it's a retool, there are 10 to 12 moves I can name off immediately that would qualify as a rebuild more than a retool, even though they may want to describe it that. They've got a hit on a lot of things, but Mace, you're talking about they can't score, and this has been the case for the last two seasons.
Mm-hmm.
The difference with the Titans and other AFC playoff caliber teams, think about so the game against Kansas City, overtime. Mahomes got the ball, game over. 17-17.
Mm-hmm.
Mahomes got the ball, game over. Defense did great, and we knew Mahomes was going to go win the game. This past week against the Chargers, Staley calling timeout with less than a minute to go as the Titans are trying to score to save time for his quarterback, who had been sacked three times and threw, they had turned it over twice to the Titans defense. And they knew with 48 seconds left on the clock that they had a quarterback that could move the football with the players around him. And so did Vrabel. Vrabel didn't go for two because the time left on the clock, and he knew, hey, it was going to lead to kind of a same result situation where we can either go for two and take the lead, we miss it, we don't have the lead, and it doesn't really matter. We got to tie it with a field goal or an extra point and hope that they can just go to overtime. But he knew a field goal was going to beat them. And I think we all knew that Justin Herbert, despite the struggle that was the Chargers' offense against the Titans for the majority of that game, we knew that he was going to make the timely plays and that the Chargers were going to win the game. At least I felt that way as soon as they got the ball back.
Did you disagree with the decision to not go for two, Hutton?
No. I thought it was the right move. I thought Staley called timeout, and I was like, man, what's he – he's calling timeout to save time, but I'm also thinking, just go to overtime. I was thinking that based on the way their offense had been playing.
Mm-hmm.
And with 48 seconds left, he couldn't go for two. If the Titans – if Staley doesn't call timeout, Vrabel's going for two at the end of that game for the win with no time left. Mm-hmm. Final play, going for two. Or if he milks it down to, 15 seconds, 20 seconds – where you've got to be in scramble mode offensively.
Right.
Vrabel's going for two in the win right there, just like he did in London against the Chargers. There's no doubt in my mind on it. But with 48 seconds, it didn't matter because if you missed it, game's over. If you got it, game's probably over because you still have to go defend the quarterback, and they've got a kicker who will make a 51-yarder.
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought that was the right move to just go ahead, kick the extra point, tie it, hope your defense can get a stop. Way too much time on the clock for the Chargers to get the win. But next question for you, Hutton, is looking at this offense, I think it's such an anomaly to me. And it's a question that we've all been trying to answer for this entire season of the second half issues with this offense. I don't understand how a team can be fine in the first half and then all of a sudden just not be able to get anything moving in the second half. I mean, it just sounds like a Todd Downing issue to me. And while not all of the Titans' offensive issues are a Todd Downing issue, seems like a lot of them go back to Todd Downing.
I think it's that and penalties.
Yeah.
That and penalties. And, you know, the big swing in the Jacksonville game, it was the second half, but it wasn't the second half. It's the way the Titans finished the first half.
Turnovers.
The turnover led to a touchdown. The Jags start the second half with a kickoff return for a touchdown that was called back. And then Trevor Lawrence drove right down the field to start the second half. And that's really where I thought they put it away. That was it was a marquee moment where the Titans weren't overcoming that. So I don't know if it's, of course the offense has got to pick up the pace. But I think there's also situations where the other team deserves some credit. But every game is the same, and every game is unique in its own way. But to me, it's very predictable what this Titans team is and isn't. They're a team that's going to be scrappy, next man up on defense. Mm-hmm. They're going to play, for the most part, okay special teams. And on offense, it's going to be a massive struggle where they are begging for a low-scoring game where they can run the football and praying like hell that their offensive line is going to hold up enough to where Ryan Tannehill isn't hurt. And we've seen that way too often this season. They're kind of in no man's land. Their defense got a bit of their bite back, I felt like, against the Chargers. Offensively, they have zero identity, none. And they didn't trade away their identity when they traded A.J. Brown. They said our identity is offensive line and run game. That's no secret, but they can't even be good at that. They failed to move the chains. What, third and two or less, they were 1-for-3 on third down last week. I mean, that's awful for a team that prides itself on winning in the trenches. Mm-hmm. That in a nutshell is who this Titans team is. They've gone from, you know, a slugfest boxing match to a team that's finesse, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. Like, in the trenches, they're not the physical tone setters by any means. And I think they know it.
Last one for you, Hutton. From what we know now, how do you think things go down? How do you think things go down on Saturday?
I mean, I was shocked when I saw the Texans were underdogs by 7. I know that line has moved to 5. I mean, I've seen nothing from this Titans team to think that it's breaking out of any shell. Let's start there. And the Texans team that has shown up against the Chiefs and the Cowboys, they're absolutely beating the Titans on Saturday. The question is, without I know Damian Pierce is now on IR, Stingley's on IR. I'm curious to see like the next group. I know Rex Burkhead in the backfield and a couple of others I think that are rotating in for their run game. But this is more about Tennessee than it is Houston, and we're seeing a Houston team that's at least playing hard and playing okay and kind of raising some eyebrows. It's more about the Chiefs and the Cowboys, but that was the team that was able to go toe-to-toe with them. I will not be shocked if the Texans come in here and win, and there's no doubt in my mind it's a close game. Tight game, fourth quarter, and what's going to be a temperature, I believe the feels like temperature is like 5 degrees on Saturday, so Merry Christmas, Titans fans.
Yeah, that is the crazy thing. I mean, this Texans team is really, truly awful. They have won one game this season, but they still will not back down. They still have so much fight left in them. Hutton, thank you for joining us. We'll chat with you next week.
Always enjoy it. Have a great day, and then happy holidays. Merry Christmas to you.
Hey, same to you, Hut.
All right, appreciate you, Hutton. Coming up next, Todd Downing is at the podium. Said something that struck a nerve with me. We'll get into that coming up next. Chase Ridley, D-Maze, 1025-1063, The Game. Chase Ridley, D-Maze, 1025-1063, The Game and The Game Nashville app. Hey, play Silly Underdog Picks today. Pick 3 football underdog teams that you think will win this week for a chance to win great prizes. Play now at thegamenashville.com or the 1025 The Game app. Silly Underdog Picks is presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket and Superbook Sports. Voted number one sportsbook in Vegas. Download their app today. Let's go to your phones. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Also, we will get into Todd Downing, Shane Bowen. They are up at the podium. We'll get to that in just a bit. We'll go to your phones. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. One texter texts in and says, at this point, just blow everything up. Lose to the Texans, lose to the Jags, lose the division, and start over next year. Awfully doom and gloom.
I wouldn't. I mean, you can't do that. You know, you can't even appear to give off that type of energy to your players. You just can't, because if you decide to blow it up right now to end it all, you've lost the team completely, and they need to go with a new head coach. They need to just clean the whole coaching staff out, if indeed they take that approach of, hey, listen, we're done. Let's call it a wrap. Let's rest everyone. You're going to lose that locker room, and you're never going to get it back, because the one thing that Vrabel has preached is fight, fight, fight. We're going to continue to fight no matter what. And if you say to your team, not verbally, but by the things that you are doing, that it's over, we're not going to even fight, you might as well hand your resignation in to Amy Adams Shrunk, because you have lost the team from that point on. I don't think Vrabel would ever do that. But if indeed that was the case, then you might as well go ahead and walk out the door the minute you do that.
Well, and I think for fans, like, tanking has become such a, like, commonplace in sports in general.
Listen, teams don't want to tank if
players
they have anything.
Players don't want to tank.
Players are not tanking.
Players don't want to lose games. They're not going to go out there and say, hey, you know what? I'm a receiver. This is a catchable ball, but I'm going to drop it because we want the top pick in the draft next year. Players don't care about draft picks.
That ain't their problem. That's the organization's problem.
No.
I'm not going to, jeopardize my playing career moving forward because you want to tank. I'm not a part of that. You know, if you want to tank, that's up to you, head coach or GM. It's your organization. Yeah, but that's not me. I'm going to continue to play. If you want to tank, you don't want me to go out there and give maximum effort, then bench me. Because if I go out there, I'm going to play, I'm going to give my hardest. And me and those other 50 guys, if we all give our hardest, more likely we're going to win. So if you want to tank, don't put none of us in. But then you might as well be walking out the door, too.
And what good does that do this organization?
None.
I mean, at this point, like, you can still win the division.
Yeah.
The division is, like, the Titans have a 69% chance of winning the division. So I get it that fans feel like there's a point of no return. And that's, you're a fan. You can be reactive like that. That's totally fine. But tanking, I don't think, does this team any good.
No, it doesn't. So fans, it's, you know, I know there are a group of fans that think that would be the best thing for the team, but, you know, it's not happening. Vrabel is not tanking for no matter what. He's going to try to win ball games and get his team into the playoffs.
Cool is up next on the offensive line. What's up?
At this point,
Cool. Cool once, cool twice.
You there?
I guess cool's not there.
All right.
Me?
Go ahead.
Hello?
Go.
Yes.
Okay, yes. Yeah. My thing is, on Sunday, we lose because they are so afraid to use Derrick Henry on 2-yard line. Right? Ryan got sacked. Took us out of field goal range. And that, everybody was talking, don't get sacked and make an order. So the game could be tied 17-17 or go to overtime, whatever it is. I don't understand why they took him out. Every time is a short yardage. Let him be on the field. Run him. He can get it. If you want to go for it, go for it.
Yeah.
And try to throw it, and the whole line is so horrible. That's terrible.
Yeah, thank you for your call. Thank you for your call. And I think that to the caller's point about why is Derrick Henry on the sidelines on 3rd and 2, like, we are all asking ourselves that same question. We are all dumbfounded. And about, the offensive line giving up a sack when you absolutely positively could not give up a sack there. Mm-hmm. And then now it's a 51-yard field goal instead of a 42-yard field goal. And the game and the field goal looks completely different. Mm-hmm. I'm with you. I understand fans' frustration about the offensive line. I get it. But this offensive line was doomed to start from the beginning. And giving up that sack, I don't put as much on the offensive line as I put on Todd Downing. For calling, like, at that point, I know it's 3rd and 9. Just run the football. Give yourself better field position to kick a field goal. You don't need to be calling a play where you're dropping back and Ryan Tannehill has time in the pocket and he's looking for an open receiver. Just get the ball out quickly or run the ball, kick the field goal, and then move on from there. I think those are all offensive coordinator problems.
Yeah, and again, those are the decisions that are asked of you to make when you are in that position, whether to, you know, on 3rd down to run the ball to put us in a better position to kick a field goal, or are we trying to get the 1st down? And try to score a touchdown rather than a field goal. Judging by what they did, they were thinking more touchdown than field goal. Because, you know, regardless of how the defense played during the game, I don't think they believe that they can hold the Chargers for too much longer. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to get points. We need to get points. Now, whether that was the best idea or not, I don't know. Obviously, it turned out not to be.
Right.
You know, but at that particular moment, they probably thought that, you know, this is the best course of action. And I'm sure no one on that offensive unit at that particular moment questioned what was Downing doing. I think they all went in and said, okay, that's a good play. Let's run it. Let's execute and get a first down and go from there. But hindsight is 20/20, and hey, maybe you should have just ran the ball up the gut, put yourself in a position to kick a field goal, and hope and pray that Bullock make the field goal. Because if he doesn't make it, you know what it is then? Well, why didn't you try to get the first down? You know, that's why. You know, he has a tough job, but no one feels sorry for him. Mm-hmm. This is the job that you wanted. This is the job that you coveted. Being an offensive coordinator, it's not many of them in the league. So you have to put together a game plan. You have to make decisions in that moment that you believe are best for your team. And if it doesn't work out the way you had hoped, then there's going to come backlash. Their fans are going to ridicule you. Not necessarily because of that one play. It's not – I think what people need to understand is not just that one play.
No.
It's a bunch of plays, but that one play is just, you know, on top. That's the last play that we saw. It's like, why would you do that? Like, seriously?
I mean, sometimes you're going to go for things.
Exactly.
And it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. That's football. Sometimes you just play teams that can get mm-hmm. stops, and that's fine. But I think with Todd Downing, it's a culmination of this entire season, and I'll even go back to last season.
Last season, yeah.
Of just questionable decision-making of I am no football expert. Mm-hmm. I cannot be an offensive coordinator in the league. I know that. But there are certain moves that I'm looking at, I wouldn't call that.
Uh-huh.
But I'll go back to your phones. One text in says, do you think that Vrabel's loyalty to Downing comes from a feeling of being scorned by LaFleur and Arthur Smith? He doesn't want to hire a more competent offensive coordinator that could leave him in 2 years.
Well, that's the nature of the business.
You can't
operate out of fear.
I'd rather have turnover at the offensive coordinator uh-huh. position every year or every 2 years with competent offensive coordinators, mm-hmm. with good offensive coordinators, rather than stick with a bad one.
Well, you know,
doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't. I was thinking about this particular question when Jonathan was talking and you asked him something about offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, okay, Vrabel under Dean Pease had control of that defense. And that defense was a good defense under Dean Pease. Why? Dean Pease had the experience. He had the cachet. He had won Super Bowls. I mean, Dean Pease will go down as one of the greatest defensive coordinators in the National Football League. He would never, I don't think there was ever a moment of questioning Dean Pease. Dean Pease had that defense. Shane Bowen seemed to have gotten that point, but I think he still works closely with Mike Vrabel in a sense. But Shane Bowen is allowed to, not even allowed, Shane Bowen, you have that job. I think Vrabel trusts you. That Vrabel don't have to interject anything with the defense mm-hmm. in Shane Bowen because he knows they're going to be fine. Offensive coordinators over the last couple of years with the Titans, one has been it's been a revolving door, musical chairs. They've changed offensive coordinators, but I don't think he's ever brought in a coordinator that had that cachet. Mm-hmm. Even when he brought in LaFleur was new to it, you know, but then. LaFleur parlayed that into a head coaching job. I don't know. Vrabel, his next hire, if indeed he does hire somebody, it need not be Kelly. No way, no how.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to hire someone that has proven they can coordinate at a high level. That I don't have to worry about or question what you're doing. I don't have to interject what you're doing. You do your job. I'm going to be the CEO of the team. Successful organizations in football, I found, when you have successful head coaches, they delegate. They worry about being the CEO of the whole team. They don't have much time to interject everywhere at all times in all times. Vrabel, I think, has gotten to a point where on offense he's interjecting a little bit more than what he probably wants to. And that's not good. You need someone that's going to run that offense that has the experience. And when I'm saying experience, like experience in playoffs, mm-hmm. tough games, Super Bowls, there's guys out there. And I'm sure there are guys that would be willing to come to Nashville to coach with Mike Vrabel because Mike's a good coach. So you got to find somebody like that. Tim Kelly, I don't know, because that's your boy. That's still your boy.
That's your Houston boy.
Exactly.
And he does have experience. He's been a play caller in the league before.
But I mean, listen.
But so did Todd Downing.
Exactly.
You saw how that turned out.
Todd Downing did. And Tim Kelly, if that experience was that good, he would be a coordinator right now. Kelly would be a coordinator. Someone would be calling wanting his services. But that's not the case. Give me somebody that knows how to call a game that has ushered themselves into the new era of football. You know, not just running Derrick Henry all the time. Again, I go back to Heimerdinger. Eddie was 8 years in. But Heimerdinger knew that if we're going to win, yeah, we're going to still run Eddie, but we got to become more of a passing team. We got to do things that generate points. We're not going to forget about Eddie, but we got to learn how to do some other things. And we did. That's what the Titans got to do. Don't forget about Derrick Henry, but learn how to win in other ways if they do stop Derrick Henry.
What does Todd Downing think is the problem with the Titans offense? We'll get into that coming up next. Plus, back to your phone, 615-737-1025. Chase, Willie, and D-Mace is presented by Hair Club. Hair Club, love your hair, live your life, creating custom hair loss solutions for men and women. Chase, Willie, D-Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game.
Why go away from Derek and the two-third of twos when he's your bread and butter guy?
I wouldn't say that we were trying to go away from Derek, particularly in those looks against the Chargers. There were specific defenses and defensive packages that we were trying to take advantage of. You know, they were playing their big nickel front with five bigs on the field. And one of them, obviously, Malik had the first one. That was a conversion. The second one, we just missed an opportunity. They played coverage a little different than we expected. They dropped Nick Westbrook. He was, by himself on a corner route. And then on the third one, we got a matchup with Chig being covered by Kyle Van Noy from the line of scrimmage, which based on my last couple weeks at the podium here, it would be something you guys would be pretty fired up about. So we just didn't execute well enough. Certainly not trying to abandon Derek.
There you go. That was Todd Downing at the podium just now. Asked, hey, why do you abandon running the ball with Derek Henry? It's third and two. And Todd Downing goes in to explain why. And I hear his explanation. Mm-hmm. I understand what he's saying. And I don't agree with it. Because are you familiar with the phrase, keep it simple, stupid?
Mm-hmm.
That's how I feel with, KISS. Keep it simple, stupid. That's how I feel with Todd Downing. I understand that you're seeing these certain looks from the defenses. I understand that they drop back to defend Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. I hear you. I got you. It's third and two. You have the best running back in the league. Run it with him. Or at least pretend like you're going to run it with him. At least have a threat of the run game on third and two. I hear you, Todd Downing. Keep it simple. Run it with Derrick Henry on third and two.
Well, we know what he's going to do this week. He's going to run the ball with Derrick Henry.
Who
third and two.
Knows what he's going to do this week? Sometimes I think I know what's obvious, but that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah. It seems like the simple thing to do is to run Derrick Henry, and sometimes it is the simple thing to do. Hey, listen, the most obvious thing is sometimes the simplest thing and the best thing, run Derrick Henry. But they felt that, you heard his explanation. They were playing a certain defense and whatnot, so we felt if we did this, then it would counter, what they were doing from a defensive standpoint. And listen, if it works, then great. If it doesn't work, then we got a problem. He has a tough job. No one feels sorry for him. But I think if from here on out, if he leans on Derrick Henry, then I don't think you can go wrong. Because right now at this point, he's really, you know, with your quarterback injured, he's really the only guy that can change the outlook of a game, because it's the shortest, you know, you just hand it off to him. There shouldn't be any mistakes with handing the ball off to Derrick Henry. If you try to pass the ball with Malik Willis, you may open yourself up to more mistakes or turnovers. But if I turn the ball or turn around and hand it off to Derrick Henry, then that's a simple thing to do. Let's roll with that. And they can do that versus the Houston Texans. So we believe they can.
And I think there's one part of this, this Todd Downing clip, if you listen carefully, one thing that makes me frustrated. This was Todd Downing again.
Why go away from Derek and the two-third of twos when he's your bread-and-butter guy?
I wouldn't say that we were trying to go away from Derek, particularly in those looks against the Chargers. There were specific defenses and defensive packages that we were trying to take advantage of. You know, they were playing their big nickel front with five bigs on the field, and one of them, obviously Malik had the first one. That was a conversion. The second one, we just missed an opportunity. They played coverage a little different than we expected. They dropped Nick Westbrook. He was, you know, by himself on a corner route. And then on the third one, we got a matchup with Chig being covered by Kyle Van Noy from the line of scrimmage, which, based on my last couple weeks at the podium here, would be something you guys would be pretty fired up about. So we just didn't execute well enough. Certainly not trying to abandon Derek.
That last part, we didn't execute well enough, and that interpretation to me, that's Todd Downing saying it wasn't me. Mm-hmm. I adjusted to the defensive looks. I did my job. The players didn't do their jobs. Mm-hmm. The players didn't execute the play that I drew up, and I have a problem with that, because even if that is the case, uh-huh, even if Todd Downing is some sort of offensive guru and drew up the most perfect play, which I don't think is necessarily the case, to get up at the podium and tell everyone, wasn't me, not my fault, players need to be better. Mm-hmm. That's not this culture. That's not this no front runners culture. And it's I don't think it's the execution.
Mm-hmm.
It's the play calls. Because you can talk about execution all day long. You can talk about how Ryan Tannehill should have hit Robert Woods on that third down to convert. Mm-hmm. But I could tell you, you should have run it with Derrick Henry instead.
Mm-hmm.
So sure, you could say execution, but really the meat of it, the root of the problem, is the play calling. And Todd Downing doesn't realize that, or at least he's not admitting to that.
Well, he realizes what is being said. I think,
clearly, he's awfully sassy in that clip.
I think my sentiment hasn't changed with Downing when this happened last time. And he felt the need to, you know, explain in a way that would appease, you know, the media, and he just felt so like I this is what I got to do, and I don't want them to be upset with me, so I got to give them this answer. And my thing was back then, like, dude, you got to get some tough skin. Damn what they think. This is your offense, and listen, you don't have to explain, you know, why you chose to. You don't have to explain in depth each time why you chose to run a specific play, because we ran that play before and it worked. We ran it again and it worked. We ran it again and it didn't work. We ran it again and it didn't work, or it did work. So I don't have to explain. He shouldn't feel he has to explain and get in his feelings every time. But to me, he doesn't have thick skin. And when he said it that time, and to me, it was a red flag. I said, you can't have a coordinator like that. You just can't. You got to have a coordinator. He had to have thick skin.
Calling out the media.
Yeah, he
got to
have thick skin. Just do your job. You know they're going to pelt you with questions because they don't like what you're doing. But listen, they've never coached a game. They don't understand the intricacies of a football game. They don't understand the ins and outs. So no matter what you tell them, sometimes it's just not going to register the way it would with, say, a player. And that's not to, you know, poo-poo on the media people, but it has to come to a point where it's, okay, this is why I made my decision. and that's it. I'm not going further into it to try to appease you.
And don't tell me, well, we weren't trying to get away from running the ball mm-hmm. with Derek. And then you abandoned the run with Derek. Don't tell me. Don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining. It is National Signing Day, and the early signing period in college football starts today, closes on Friday. So Vanderbilt head coach Clark Lee will join us breaking down all things transfer portal and National Signing Day coming up next. It's Chase Willie and D-Mace 102.5, 106.3, The Game.